Okay.
The cranberries or black cherry?
Black cherry.
True.
Did you
get a little nice? You have the speaker button on the phone? You don't have to. Just look down. It's on there. I don't have the phone in front of me, but you say you don't, so you shouldn't have to hold the thing up to your ear.
I mean, who do you have to be around here to get a little inside? I mean, who if not she?
Okay. That's
fine. Perfect.
Okay, fine.
We'll just let it be.
Well,
that was almost the song I chose.
Yeah.
Is it?
Yes. Okay, almost. But I decided on something different. It's actually Liz chose this song. I'm sorry she's not here yet to hear it. But the song is Devil Went Down to Georgia.
Love
that song. I love that song. I heard it years and years ago, and I fell in love with it. And really, what a great song. Is everyone familiar with it?
Yes.
Okay.
Did you see the Kennedy Center Honors by chance?
No.
Okay.
No.
They showcased it with, the Pips.
Oh, you're kidding. That's kind of a weird thing.
Yeah, Martha Reeves. I've got Martha Reeves going through my head. No.
Gladys Knight, the Pips.
Yeah, she did it, too.
Wow.
Well, it's a classic song. It really is. It's a great song. But I'll ask a very simple question. The premise of the song, let's start that. The premise of the song is that the devil is behind schedule. The devil is behind schedule and has not met his quota of souls for the month. So he's looking to go find a soul to go get, to bargain with. Need somebody to sell him a soul. So comes across Johnny, good old Johnny down in Georgia.
Playing his fiddle hot.
Exactly. And he challenges him to a contest. Challenges him to a contest and says, if I win, I get your soul. If you win, Johnny, you get to keep this beautiful gold violin, this beautiful gold fiddle. And that's the deal. Devil goes first, plays a great, great tune. Johnny's like, that's nothing. Listen to this. And he goes in, he whips his, you know what, totally takes the cake, wins the prize, and he begs at the very end, and he says, anytime you're in the mood, devil, you come on back down to Georgia. We can do this anytime. That's the basic premise of the song. It's a great song. I love the solo with the violin. I just love it. It's great. Nothing like it. You looking up the words?
It wasn't Gladys Knight and the Pips. It was Marshall
Tucker. Not calling you, my love.
It was Marshall Tucker and Charlie Daniels.
That's his song.
Charlie Daniels. I get it.
Okay, so fine. So let's start with the basic premise. Because again, the whole idea of this class is to use song to discuss Jewish topics. So let's start with the basic. Do we believe in a devil? Devil went down to Georgia. Do we believe in the devil?
Red singular being with the horns and the tail. But I mean, we have an evil inclination.
No.
Maybe it can manifest as something.
Nah.
I'm not sure.
No, there is
that's it. Not sharing the wine anymore.
There is something called Satan who this discourses with God.
About Job.
Yeah, so okay. it's a manifestation of some nature, but there is a reference to something called Satan.
Okay, what is it?
I think it's just like when they play squash the wall.
I don't know what that is.
The wall when they play squash. It's a dummy partner.
Oh, play squash with the wall.
Oh. Yeah. Is it real? Or is it just...
the wall is real.
Or is it just... No, what I'm saying is Satan real. I know the wall is real. I've bumped into it here and there. Is Satan real?
I assume, yes. It's the wall that reacts in a certain predictable way to certain
things. I think it's a vengeful God we believe in. The devil.
It's
an idea, not actual.
This is
great.
It's something.
I haven't
something
said a word.
We'll teach you.
Yeah,
I gives you a different perspective on the same thing. So kind of something that forces the conversation to look at the things from a different direction. In my opinion,
is it a real being though, or is it just something
what's real? What is real?
Really? We're here.
From point of view of biblical discussion, it's not really important how real a certain character is. Prophet Daniel real?
Yes.
It's compound character.
Okay.
It's widely understood that we'll put it that way. That's written at least by three authors, and you know, part of it is written in Aramaic, some in Hebrew.
Isn't the Jewish devil. Right.
That Satan is not the Jewish devil.
Through her.
Is that a question? Is that
that's
a statement?
Statement?
It's a statement. Okay. What is it then?
I don't know.
You know,
Joe, what is it?
I'm coming from a different tradition, so
go ahead. Tell me what you think.
Well, I mean, you have, of course, the angels were cast down from heaven for this in pride. So Lucifer was the leader of the rebellion against God.
That is a classic Christian perspective about Satan and many like him.
Rabbi, tell me.
That's what they name.
Tell me, please, when I'm wrong.
No,
as soon as possible.
I think
in the Roman Empire, wasn't there a special official state official whose duty was to challenge the emperor? He was called the opponent. That was a job. So whenever emperor came with a triumphant from a war from a military expedition, he was supposed to run next to the chariot where the emperor was riding.
Okay.
His duty was to shout, "You're not as great as you think you are."
Thou art mortal.
And it's
there you go.
That would make me very upset.
Yeah, but it was done for a reason, so the emperor does not want to become conceited.
Yeah.
So he gives you the perspective.
That worked out.
He's playing the devil's advocate.
Very good. Devil's advocate.
And the same problem with jester in the medieval courts and things that they're provided some kind of a balance.
Okay. I'm not gonna disagree with that. I think that is certainly what has been used. But the question that I'm asking is, from a purely theological standpoint, what does Judaism believe? That is the question. I'm not asking how we use the concept.
Yeah.
Does Judaism believe in a being, creature, whatever you want to call it, something called the devil or Satan? Do we believe in such a thing? So Lauren has gone on record. No, I think. Question mark. Did I get that right?
Yeah. Okay.
Describe as somebody who has a degree of atheism, but still it's under the auspices of God. It performs a certain role.
So
that's allocated to.
Okay, but hold on to that.
Mm. Yeah. It's God's servant who's purpose is to throw in. To throw in.
Okay, hold on to that. Dimitri, I like this. If I may, Joe, what you presented is a classical perspective, that this was an angel amongst other angels that at some point defied God and now represented the contrary view of God and is a force to be reckoned with. There's God on one side and Satan and his ilk on the other side. That is a classic picture. But it is the farthest from the Jewish perspective. The Jewish perspective is very, very clear. There is no independent power. There is no independent authority that exists outside of God. I'll be very careful here. This is really important. You can have a concept, which we're going to discuss, of where evil exists in the world. Hello, Liz. Welcome. No, it's all about the devil went down to Georgia. Just saying. It's good we live in Virginia.
Yeah.
Okay, so we got we started with the basic question. Do we believe in a devil, a Satan kind of thing? So we had different opinions. It was great, good discussion. But I was just presenting that we believe that there is a concept of evil existing in this world. We say, of course, but it's not so simple. It's somewhat of a conundrum. It really is, because, again, taking a step back, we believe that there's a God in the world. We can question it, but for today, we're working with that assumption. There is a God in this world, okay?
Or in the world to come.
And in the world.
There is a God in this world, in this universe, in everything that exists. God is there. We also believe one of the basic tenets and principles of Judaism is that everything comes from God. And I'll say it out loud. I'll make sure it's clear. Good and evil. But I want to be really careful, Stacey.
Why?
I have to be very careful. Because people have had the tendency to take something out of context and create a whole new concept, which I'm not saying. Let me try to be clear. I believe, I'll start with that. I, Zvi Tachman, believe that God is perfect. I, Zvi Tachman, believe that God is 100% good. That is my starting point. Okay? I'm left with a major question. If those two assumptions are true, how could there be evil in this world?
Evil.
If it comes from God, wait. That's what I did with the big box.
Which is
very little. God, you can't have evil come out of something that's perfectly good.
But
it's impossible.
But you can.
How?
Because there cannot be shadow without a source of light.
What?
There cannot be shadow without a source of light.
But God is infinite light. There's no shadow.
Well, how would we describe
it? Only in our world. 1 second.
Yeah.
In our world. On the sun, there's no shadow.
I have some traditions say that evil doesn't exist as an independent entity. It's the absence of God.
Okay. So we're going to get there. Okay, I just want to be clear. Where I'm going with all of this is exactly to dispel that notion of where there's an independent force outside of God that represents something other than God. That is exactly what I'm coming to address. That can't be from a Jewish perspective, because everything comes from God. How does it work out that there's good and evil if there's a perfect God that is good? Well, the answer is along the lines of what Joe is suggesting, and that is any evil is allowed to exist. I'm being careful here. I didn't say God brought about and produced evil. God allows evil to exist in the world. Perhaps we're going to get the reason being for free will. Agreed. But it's got to be a step by step. I just want to make sure we're all on the same place. I know from previous classes and many, if I throw too many terms out at one time, you think I'm saying one thing because you already have a basis for it. And no, but it's hard. So just give me a couple of minutes to develop it. But that's the idea.
We can stop just for a second and discuss what free will is.
We will.
Angels do that.
Hey, McFly, we will. I'll get there.
Okay.
Satan, devil, whatever you want to call this thing that represents evil in our world, from a Jewish perspective, is not an independent source. It can't exist. The way I think of this, right? There are certain, I know like my clock in my room, no matter how many times I change the battery that's there as a backup, it never works. The second I take it out of the socket, as soon as it comes out of the outlet, boom, the clock is dead. That's just, I don't know what I'm doing wrong, but it's not working. There's no backup. That, hysterically, is exactly the picture I have of everything that exists in our world. As long as it's plugged in, so to say, even minimally to God, it can exist. It has a place and a source to exist. The second it's completely unplugged, it can't exist anymore. I'll show you where I'm coming from. Let's go back to what's my favorite story in the Torah. We come back to it every time. What's my favorite story?
No.
Come on, Liz.
You have Jacob.
Good guess, but earlier than that.
Garden of Eden.
Garden of Eden. Huh? It always comes back to that story.
I was going to say.
Always.
Okay. You.
Sure.
God comes for you. God comes to Adam and Eve and says, do not eat from that tree. Right? I know. We know the which tree. No, where is it? Right. But where? Right? Don't eat from that tree of knowledge of good and evil. Why? For on the day you eat of it, you shall surely die. Remember that?
And that wasn't
the Shaker. Literally not.
I mean, if God said that.
Really? Have you ever told your children that
they may not die? What that means? Right. I don't know.
You, my question is different. My question is, they did it. They broke with that law. Did they die that day? Mm-hmm. So God's a liar.
No, no, they died in a certain way. No, I mean, the Christians died or
that. No, I'm reading you the words of the.
What does that mean?
They became mortal.
They became mortal.
Okay, so
you guys can make it as colloquial as you want, but the facts speak for themselves.
So the answer is no.
It sure sounds like it. Adam lives for 930 years. Mm-hmm.
He's
so
that
has to be
another.
I'll read you the words. Hashem God took the man, placed him in the Garden of Eden to work it and to guard it. Hashem God commanded the man, saying, of every tree of the garden you may freely eat, but of the tree of knowledge of good and bad you must not eat thereof. For on the day you eat of it, you shall surely die. I don't know how you get more explicit than that. Well, what should it say? You
saying,
lose your innocence?
No, all I'm saying is some of the things in here have many levels of meaning.
Yes, but
much depth.
100.
They mean something other than the literal.
I'm with you. Oh, but it has to at least include the literal. No. You can't make it that it's saying it means you're going to turn green. Because, you know, for all of a sudden, if you walk around, you're green, you're dead. You can't say something. That's just preposterous. It has to at least include the basic meaning. But I'm asking you a simple question. Did they die that day or not?
No, but how long is the day? In the
at that point, it's got to be 24 hours. 24 had to be. How do we determine the day? Based on the rotation of? Right. When was that?
A couple days before.
Yeah, more than a couple, right? It was the fifth day of creation.
Days existed before the
world. It's exactly 930 years, though. That's how long he lives. You can't tell me that that's a day.
The time did go differently.
I don't disagree for the first 3 days.
Mm-hmm.
From the fourth day on, I disagree. Because that's when you have all things are
that.
It's all in orbit. What we call today a day is this rotation of all the constellations and all the, that's the same as it was starting on day four of creation.
So in other words, he literally lived 930 years.
Yes.
He lived to be 930.
You're asking me a different question. Oh my God, who lives that long? It's a good question. That's a good question, but not for tonight.
What's going on?
Okay, but I understand you say yes.
What's going on in the Garden of Eden right now? Are there any people there?
He's gonna get up and leave.
No, he's not.
Not at all. I love it. Nobody's walking out here unsatisfied. We are gonna work this through.
Okay, but God can't be a liar.
Thank you. Because he's perfect in my book.
Right.
So he lied.
He can't have lied.
Awesome.
He can't
so how is he probably gonna answer this?
I don't know, not you.
You hear my problem, though? I mean, it's a really simple, straightforward issue.
The definition is, what is the definition of death in this context?
Okay, I'm open to suggestions, but it sure as hell better include dying. It has to include dying.
It was without a precedent. Nobody had died before.
Okay.
So what did it mean to anybody? What does it mean you'll die?
You're giving me a rationale. But what, did God mean something with it? The fact that we may not have understood it is a different issue. But the fact is, what did God mean by that?
In my opinion, because death had not existed, he introduced death.
Great.
As a fact of
life. So why doesn't it say that? For on the day of, it shouldn't say on the day of. If you do, but of the tree of knowledge of good and bad, you must not eat thereof. Why? Because you will become mortal. You will now die. I can live with that, but that's not what it says. It says on that day. If I were the editor, I'd say get rid of that line, because all you're doing is you're going to get in trouble. Because what happens if it's more than a day later?
Is that the?
And you sound like a liar. Thank you. I would have taken those words out. Simple.
Well, what does the Hebrew say?
Well, that's going to help you, right? I'll read the Hebrew.
It's not a good translation.
Because on the day you eat from it, most tamus, you shall surely die.
Okay,
so
to the translation. It's pretty
strong. So we don't have an issue
with that. Well, we surely can. So I think. That we begin to understand this as follows. And I'm not going to disagree with Dimitri on this. I really think that he's onto it. You buy your kid a present, okay? A battery-operated toy, right? You buy your kid, your grandkid, whatever you buy. And then on that first day, right? All the lights are working and the siren is blaring and, you know, all the things are flashing. And it's like, for all intents and purposes, you know that that battery is going to run out. Right? For all intents and purposes, that toy is dead. But right now it's got flashing lights and sirens going. That's just stored energy that has now become limited because the battery can only hold so much. But in real terms, it's dead. It's dead now, even though it's flashing lights and sirens blaring, because it's got now a limited time span.
Okay.
It's only got stored energy that will now play itself out. The day they ate from it, you use the words, you have said it 100% right. And that is, they became mortal. That means there was a cap put on their lifespan. Before they ate from it, they were going, whatever this means, but they were going to live eternally. No end. Plugged in at all times.
Okay.
The minute you're unplugged, even if the battery, not like my clock, even if the battery is working, it's only a matter of time. It's gonna die. The day they ate from it, they surely became mortal and they died immediately. But they lived 930 days. That's stored energy.
But so are we.
Correct. We are now products of this. This is going forward forevermore.
Was there a change?
But so we're alive, but we're dead.
Correct. Because the minute you, this is where we are different than God. God is an infinite source. There is no creature, nothing, whether it's animal, human, whatever, that has that other than God. Everything by definition is dead. Now, some live longer, some live less, but that's just a matter of how much stored energy God has given that particular creature. I just, before I get there, I promise. Okay. I want to make sure that we understand this concept.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. But there can be no creature that is independent of God that can live forever. That's an impossibility. So Satan, for example, can't be another version of God, but from the negative perspective. And you have two dueling gods. One is presented as the good guy, one presented as the bad guy, and they slug it out forevermore. That can't be from our perspective. So what is the devil? What is Satan? We'll get to that in a moment, but I promise. Go ahead, Dimitri.
Yeah, in a way, if a living creature that's designed to live forever stops being that, it becomes a different living creature. You can describe it as a death over an eternal creature.
Agreed. I'll buy that.
All not only human beings.
I'm going to put a big smile on my
That's
head.
Correct. That's correct. Because Joe's right. Okay. This is not only a decree against mankind. Mm-hmm. This is a decree for every creature. Because if you go through it, and we'll say this for another time, right? There's a hierarchy.
We have dominion.
Correct. We have dominion. We were created last because we're supposed to be the custodials of this world. And it's our responsibility to take care of everything in our charge, including every creature. So if we're going down, the ship's going down. Everything aboard's going down. Mm-hmm. But that's for another concept. Okay?
Because God said that, told Adam to name the creatures, meant to define.
Correct.
The creatures.
That's correct.
How very interesting.
Thank you. Okay. I didn't write it. I'm just going to explain it. I put an advertisement where they were trying to sell the Chumash, whatever it was, and it had, you know, because it was a commentary by a rabbi, whatever, right? And it says, and you can get a signed copy by the author. And I'm thinking, I want a copy of the song, I guess I'm a copy from this song. I don't think so. Okay, so what is the devil? What is it? So I like what Dimitri said, and I think it resonated very much with you, Lauren. Think of what is an angel? Let's start there. What's an angel? Well, okay, I know what we thought an angel was when we were growing up, and that is when somebody passes away, they've earned their wings, and they become not happening. Well, I'm glad. Okay.
We do a mitzvah. We make an angel.
What does that mean?
We make one single focused.
What is it?
Being.
Oh, it is a being.
It's a spiritual being, right? That's like sparks. We're pushing it up, right?
Okay.
Okay.
We'll work with that.
Yeah, but it does have agency. It does have, because there was an angel of death, right?
Who said?
A purpose, though. I don't know if there is an angel.
The stages.
Yes, yeah. So an angel, if the simplest way to put it is, think of mankind as a hybrid, which we know. Mm-hmm. Mankind is created as dust of the earth, right? It's got a physical component, but also God breathed into mankind a soul. So we have a physical and spiritual. We have a hybrid. We are the middle ground. There are those that are all physical, they're known as animals. Animals don't have the same level soul that we do. Flowers don't have a soul. They're creatures, right? But they're physical, purely physical. You have that which is purely spiritual also. That's an angel. An angel is a spiritual creation. What's its function? Its function is, someone used the word before, an agent. A messenger. In Hebrew, an angel is called a malach, not melech, king. Malach. Malach means an angel. But the literal translation of malach is messenger.
Malach. Lach.
No, spelled differently. No. Malach, that's the root, that's its own word. It means a messenger, an angel. Okay? Because their job... You said it perfectly, and that is, it's a singular focus. Every angel is given one mission only. That's its essence. That's its own, that's its job. It's not like there's a room full of angels, like you go to jury duty, right? Okay, angels 1 through 50, come in here. We're going to choose 5 of you to go. No. It's not a room full of angels waiting for a job. You know, and meanwhile, they're collecting unemployment. That's not how it works. The angel does not exist until it has a job. Mm-hmm. Then it is created to do that singular job. That's its mission. I'll show you where I get this from.
But it's not a task. Like, there's an angel that's responsible for...
It could be.
Please,
it could
encouraging be. People to donate
it's a,
blood.
It's a beautiful
Okay, if you're calling tasks on a larger scale, there are angels that are higher scale ones. Okay. Like classic ones you've all heard of, Gabriel, right? Raphael. They're more than just a singular, go heal this person. Where does the name Raphael come from? What is it in Hebrew? Anyone know? Raphael. What does Raphael have to do with the word
refuah?
Refuah, like you wish somebody refuah shlema, like have a speedy recovery. Raphael is the angel of hell, who obviously has more than. No, that's why we're here.
Is it all humans that expressly described as the Talamalachim?
Yes. Yes.
That's Reshmi, huh?
Yes. Yes. But be that as it may, an angel is a spiritual creature who has a function, who has a job and a mission to accomplish in the spiritual realm. Okay? That's the simple way to understand an angel. But again, you have angels who have a singular mission, a singular job. You have angels who are on a higher level in a hierarchical way who oversee that. Yes, we'll jump right to the top. There is an angel whose job it is lissatan. It's a verb.
Huh.
Did you know that?
No.
Yeah. Lissatan means to act as adversary, a challenger, a provocateur.
That's so cool.
Yep, like the Roman emperor had games.
It's like a company. Like a company.
Lissatan?
CEO. You got the CEO and the HR chart in the angel department.
You got this guy. He has a job to do. You know what his job is? To tempt you to not do the right thing.
That's an angel?
That is Satan. That's his job. His job and mission is to create a yin-yang opportunity.
Okay.
Now we're getting to free will. So there is a concept of a dark angel. But again, I'll say this once and I'll say it 100 times more tonight. It is not an independent source outside of the realm of God.
Would be appropriate.
It's not one-on-one, God versus the dark side. There's no such concept. There's God, and there's a good side and a bad side. Attempting to do the right thing, a temptation to not do the right thing.
How come?
So that human beings be given an opportunity to choose to do the right thing.
Without knowing.
God did not create us as robots. Purposely. Think about it. If God only wanted creatures that would pay homage to God and praise God, then he could have created robots. Yeah. And he could have had, you know what those robots are called, by the way? It had another name. Angels. We talk about angels singing God's praises. Remember our first song?
Leonard Cohen?
He's not the guy I'm thinking, but what's the name of the song?
Hallelujah.
Thank you. What is that? We talked about, right? This is praising God. Where are we? Some of these classic phrases we use. Kadosh, kadosh, kadosh. Holy, holy, holy are the God. Where does that come from? It comes from a verse in Tanakh where the angels are singing this to God.
And he wants us to praise him also.
Yes. Choose to praise. Angels do not choose it. Angels are hardwired to do that. That's its job. That angel is meant to sing that praise to God. Okay. If that's all it was meant to be, God would have a world full of animals who don't praise God, per se, and angels who do praise God. And then you have us. What are we doing? The difference is that we choose. We're tempted not to, because when that alarm goes off, and I'm supposed to be going to Minyan, I'm supposed to be going to Shul, and I'm tempted to say, oh, you got to be kidding me. I just fell asleep. There's a little voice in my head that says, but you know it's the right thing, T. Come on, come on. And then the bigger voice says, you know you're tired. Right? There's a pull in two directions. So that when I do drag my tochas out of bed and I do go to shul and I help make that minyan, you know what? I chose that path. Free will is unique to human beings. Animals don't have free will. They make choices. They have preferences. My dog prefers that as opposed to this. My cat likes this. And that's fine. That's not an exercise in free will. That's a choice. Okay. Free will is where I am struggling. I'm battling between a moral right and wrong, a good and bad. And I choose to do something. That is what makes us different. To allow that to happen, there has to be a possibility for good and evil to exist. Otherwise, we have no choice. The prisoner who's in jail, right, has free will, but has no choices. They only get one option for lunch. That's it. You don't like it, you can't go down to the store.
Some dogs, like I have a golden retriever, and she is, you know, she's bred to be sweet. And then you have other types of dogs.
Their nature. That's how God created them. They each have different natures.
Okay. So it's not a choice that they're making not to bite somebody.
I'm saying that. Can they be trained? Yes.
Yeah.
I mean, we've all been to the circus.
Yeah.
Yes, animals can be trained. Are they making free willed of their own volition to do or not do? No, they're really not.
In Jewish tradition, is there a certain age that's recognized when children?
Great question. That's an excellent question. Typically, it doesn't really start till Bar Mitzvah. That's really where it starts. Yes, we train our kids when they're younger so that they learn how to deal and make good choices. But the real struggle of where you have two bona fide options begins at Bar Mitzvah. That's really where it begins. It never ends. It gets harder and different challenges at different stages in life, which hopefully we'll get to. That's what I hope we'll get to. Okay. There are certain things that are, that a 20 and 30 year old has more of a desire for physical pleasures than an 80-year-old. I'm just using that as an example, right? That pursuit of physical pleasures, it wanes as we get older. We prefer other things. We prefer what legacy we're going to leave, the honor that we want to get. But we struggle with all the different moral challenges throughout our life. But it usually starts in a real way at that age. Okay? So I go back to my original question. Do we believe in a concept of the devil? The answer is yes, but it's not independent as a anti-God. Two independent forces slugging it out. That's not the perspective. There's God, and then you have the creation of choice. To allow that, you need two options, a good and an evil. Joe is correct. How does one get to evil if God is perfect? The answer is God, so to say. Okay, it's a very difficult, I myself don't fully grasp it. In Kabbalah, they talk about it. I'm not an expert in that either. But the concept that God allows a void to exist so that evil could exist. Because if God is there, you can't have evil because God is all good. So, but that's a difficult concept because I tell you, there's no place that's without God. So he's not there, but he is there. He's there, but he's not. I don't fully get it. I'm hoping to continue to work on this as I get older. But that's the concept. It's a void. Okay. So what? You look perplexed.
Why? I understand that God wants people to choose and to choose good.
We hope.
But why would God want people to choose like really bad? Like what's in it for?
He doesn't want it. What does the Satan want? What does Satan want? Really, if you think about it with this concept, what does Satan want? What's considered he did his mission well?
You made the choice that was tempting. Was
at the end of the day, what does Satan want to have as a check and say, I did my job? For me to do the evil, I'm going to argue just the opposite. Ultimately, if this is God's angel, this is God's messenger to tempt me, you know what really he wants? He did his job. Boy, was I tempted. But you know what? I ignored him. I overruled him and I chose. But that's
his work.
That is correct. But ultimately, if this is God's messenger, he wants the same thing God wants.
Oh, yes.
The end of the story is that God wants you to choose right. People have choice, and people can take it to the nth degree. That's not God's doing.
Okay. It's not even Satan's doing.
That's correct. Satan's doing his job, for goodness sakes.
It's a good movie to watch.
Satan cannot force you to do anything.
No, nobody can force you. Nobody can force you. Even God won't force you.
If there's one thing that's choices that we make, is the only thing that you can force people to do anything other than to make choices.
That's it. It's our choice. But the Satan's doing his job and making it a good fight.
So you think that if Satan pulls all of his, you know, gives it his best shot,
and you still overcome,
then that makes Satan happy?
Yeah.
Isn't that, why not? Again, if you come from the perspective that Satan is the embodiment of evil, anti-God, so then you're right. That makes no sense.
Okay.
Because he wants evil in the world.
Right.
That's not what I'm presenting. I'm purposely suggesting that that's not the model. The model is it's a subcategory under God,
okay,
which at the end of the day is good.
Okay. So you're a trainer pushing you to do those activities.
Good though.
This is a total, it's a paradigm shift of what I grew up with. I didn't have that concept. This is much clearer to me. Okay. So now, there is such a concept of the devil. Okay. No, it's not the guy with the horns. But it's a real being. It's a spiritual angel, a head honcho in that world, perhaps the top.
Responsible for every evil inclination or...
why not?
Presentation of a child.
That's right. Why not? Now he could have at his disposal.
Yeah.
Right. Absolutely.
It's in the budget.
I don't think that the source of evil inclination and Satan are connected in any way, because evil inclination is something that we have to have in order to survive as a physical bodies, like hunger, anger.
Is the thing. Evil inclination?
No, I don't know. I'm not sure I'll agree with that point.
Mm-hmm.
Because if you really look at this from a global perspective, right, try to map this out.
Mm-hmm.
The evil inclination is the Satan on an individual level. My evil inclination, my urge, let's put it this way, my urge to eat is no different than your urge to eat.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, maybe mine's a little stronger.
But we have to have it.
Okay. It happens to be I'm overcoming that right now.
Yes, you are.
I'm working on that. 23 pounds later.
Yes,
no, but Yetzer Hara is an evil inclination that is really, at the end of the day, to get me to do something wrong.
Mm-hmm.
Eating in and of itself is not wrong. There's nothing evil about eating.
The purpose of it.
Okay, yeah. That's a human,
yeah,
who's making that the focal point.
I
want to be careful with that, because from my perspective, and again, I'm not making this stuff up. I'm taking it from pretty bona fide sources. I'm just presenting it my way.
Mm-hmm.
Okay? The evil inclination is what gets me to do something that could be done incorrectly, right? Let's take food, for example. Let's use your example. Okay? Eating in and of itself is nothing evil. It's not. It's a mitzvah sometimes.
Mm-hmm.
Eating on Shabbos is a mitzvah. Eating in the sukkah is a mitzvah. So you can't tell me intrinsically eating is something evil. But eating on Yom Kippur is.
Or what about if you just said to yourself, well, I'm not going to eat.
I'm not going to eat again.
Okay. And 10 minutes later, I'm tempted by.
Let's not call it evil inclination. Let's call it lowly or base inclination.
But I'm not.
It's not what animals do.
But does that make it? Does that make it morally wrong?
No.
Okay.
As long as this fulfills biological purpose, you are telling me.
No.
I find
no,
that.
No, you were doing a ring to it. Even if it's to fulfill a biological need, I'm not convinced. It depends why I'm doing it. If I'm eating just to fill my belly, that's wrong. Because that's not the purpose of food. The purpose of food is for me to have physical energy and at the same time recognize the spiritual part of it as well. That's why I make a bracha before I eat it. It's not only physical nourishment, it's also soul food.
The bracha is the way to kind of prime yourself for the understanding, the correct understanding.
It does. I'm throwing new concepts at you. Listen, you know what? You guys are no longer the beginning bunch here. We're going to throw the advanced class at you now.
Can we go intermediate?
I don't know.
Yeah, we're going to the deep end here. Okay, so fine. We believe in such a concept. But let's go back to our song. Satan's running out of, he's running out of time. He has a quota, right? Okay, stop right there. There's no quota, okay? There's no such concept in Judaism that there's a quota of souls that the devil's got to get this month. It's not parking tickets. It's not how this works. But fine. He had, can you sell your soul to the devil?
You compromise yourself.
Do you own your soul?
But couldn't you redeem yourself in the next, your next choice?
Yeah, you can.
So are you suggesting, and I think Stacey's saying the same thing, and that is no, you can't actually sell your soul to the devil. You can't do that. That's not a concept. But unfortunately, we all do it based on the choices we make. We do sell ourselves. If I came up to you and I would say, sell me any good deed you've done this in your lifetime, sell it to me for $100. $100 right here, right now. You would do it?
I can't. How can I give it to you?
It's yours.
It's not mine. What do you mean? It's not.
You did good deeds and you've accrued merits because of it.
Yes, but
I'd like to buy it.
I can't give to you.
That's why I'll take your word.
Okay, I'll take your $100 then.
Deal? You want to give that up?
Oh, I have to give it up?
You're selling it to me. Why not? $100.
I don't want to give you my good deeds. I need them.
Why do you need them? I don't want
them. That's how the angels are surrounding me with all my good
deeds. I'm going to do some more.
I'll do some more. I don't know if I can give them away. Maybe
how about for 500? Pamela, how about for 500?
No, I'm not going to say yes to you.
For any amount?
No.
Oh, really? You wouldn't sell it to me?
No.
I wouldn't.
Because I need them.
Yeah. It's like an idyllic should be going. So that's too expensive. I said, don't you worry, ma'am. We can make more money.
Yeah. Would you sell it?
No, but people do good deeds for the merit of somebody else. So why would nobody should give up their own merits?
Listen.
For money? What's that going to do
with it? Well, it's funny you say that. I'm not putting anybody on the spot, but I'm sure we've heard of people who, for a couple of $100, will lie on their taxes.
Oh, yeah. That's not right, though. So I don't do it. Yeah. I mean,
for a couple of $100, people will tell the insurance company something not exactly the way it happened.
But that does happen. That's right.
Why is that not selling their soul for a couple $100?
Yes. Do we owe?
Well, I don't do it. We ask somebody who doesn't
do that. Do we own our souls? Yes, we own our souls. It's on loan to us.
We don't even know where it came from. Our body.
I know exactly where mine came from.
How do you own it? God gave it to you.
Yes, that's correct. It's on loan to me for the amount of time that God has prescribed to me. I'm not selling my soul. But what I am doing, unfortunately, what many of us do, is that we sell our principles. Those moral decisions that we consider to be morally right, and we have principles, we all do. What are we willing to do to sell, right? How often do we find ourselves selling it for something else, which is only worth a couple of $100? Okay. Again, I don't know everybody. I don't know anybody's situation here, but I have heard enough stories of people who get into squabbles with their siblings. Over what? Money?
Nothing.
Right? At the end of the day, if I came to you and I said, I'll give you $500 to never talk to your sister again, you look at me like I'm ridiculous. That's the most ridiculous thing ever. Mm-hmm. For $1,000, would you consider it? You're like, don't waste your time. That's ridiculous, right? But people do this all the time. That's not selling your principles. That's not selling your soul to some degree. Yes, I'm using it in a non-literal manner. But at the core, the idea that your soul, which is the primary source of your right and wrong, it's your moral compass. What do we do with it? We're willing to lie a little bit, fib change it a little bit. For what? For what? For a little extra pleasure? For a little extra money?
Yeah. For in some sort of a confused what's important, a moment of what's important, what's really important.
Sure. But I'm only using it as an expression, but we're selling our souls for what? For peanuts. That's ridiculous.
I still don't think you can sell your soul legally.
You can't. You can't legally sell it. You cannot.
Legally.
You cannot. The Talmud would agree with you. You cannot sell that.
But you can damage or abandon the value.
And that's really what it is. That's really what it is, right? People will sell their integrity. They'll take kickbacks, bribe. By the way, countless examples of where we sell what is really important to us. We're better positioned in the company, right? Too many stories that we hear over and over and over again. Either the power struggle that the person in the higher management takes advantage of somebody lower, or somebody lower who's willing to sell themselves, both physically and otherwise, so that they can get off. For what?
For earthly, whatever I can enjoy now.
This is the issue. And I think that that's at the heart of that song, right? This devil, right? If I can beat the devil or the bell, he's not gonna, what am I doing? I'm gonna win the golden fiddle. That's what I'm willing to sell my soul for? Okay, it's the most amazing thing. But that's all it is.
A thing.
It's a thing. And we sell our souls for things too often. Too often. And we do it. We hurt relationships. We hurt friendships. Our own integrity, even if it didn't hurt anybody else. I can, whatever. I don't want to get into personal issues.
Oh, yeah. We want to hear all about yourself.
I remember vividly a test that I was to take in school. And I was absent the day it was given. So I was given a makeup test. And the rules were very clear. You have to take the test. You can't. It's not open book. But I didn't study well. I didn't. And sure enough, I looked up the answers.
This wasn't recently, though.
No, it was just last Tuesday.
In the lifetime.
You should have had this class last week, then you wouldn't have done it.
Right?
But you learned. Easy. You learned what the answers were.
I did, but I didn't. I can tell you, look at this, how many years later and it still bothers me.
I can see that. Yeah.
Well, really the most important lesson about integrity, and they also learned what the answers were.
But the ends don't justify the means. Because I happened to learn a good lesson from it, good for me. But I still did it wrong.
If you hadn't gone to the test, you wouldn't have known the answers.
You can't rationalize this.
I can try.
I sold myself for what? Pass a stupid test that made no difference in my life.
But I mean, the truth is, everybody, every human confronts it. It's part of the condition.
That's correct.
There's nobody who doesn't do what you did, make a choice. They later look back and say, "Oh, I wish you know."
Then
you
will never do it again.
That's hard.
I don't disagree. But now, don't you wish you would have known that then?
Yes.
Okay, so that's what this is all about. This is about learning the lessons we wish we would have learned 20 years ago, 30 years ago, or more.
Yes.
You're right. It is the human condition that we make mistakes. We do. And we are tempted by things. We are tempted by opportunities that are maybe not the best. I get it. There is a Satan out there that's attempting us to make it look that it's in your best interest to do this because look at the lesson you can learn from it.
But
I'm going to start calling you
Satan.
I'm going to applaud them. Like, they can't say that.
Well, for you, it's one of the useful things.
You're right, but it doesn't justify that it was wrong.
Because it's a small thing that gave a bad taste in your mouth. That made very a bad taste. Taste.
Many, many years later, I'm still bugs me. Still bad. I was so stupid.
Did you do anything about it? How long did it take you to regret it? That's
oh, immediate. Immediate.
So did you do anything about it?
Well, those were the real.
Tell the teacher.
Are you crazy? Yeah. I was going to say, I'm stupid.
But he's never done anything like this again.
You don't know that.
We don't know that.
We'll give it the
best. I certainly read it a bit better now. We'll give it this, I think, is the idea that our job is really to preserve that integrity of the soul. That's really our mission in life. We are tempted nonstop every day. What's my approach to food? What's my approach to relationships? What's my approach to business ethics? What's my approach? There's not a day that goes by for any of us that doesn't call into question this challenge. That's called life. That's life. And the goal is to learn this lesson. Don't sell your soul. What are you selling it for? Pupkis, you're selling it for peanuts. Oh, it's worth so much. At the end of the day, you know and I know it's not. But we do it. Johnny should not have sold his soul. Now, okay, you say if you read this, if you listen to the song carefully, does he?
No, he wins.
He wins. I got to read you this. I'm telling you, when you research this stuff, I find the craziest things. Listen to this. Everyone, this is a commentary on this song. Everyone gets this one wrong. Johnny lost his soul. In the very first verse, the song tells us that the devil was, quote, looking for a soul to steal. Not a soul to win fairly in a fiddling contest. A soul to steal. Of course, the devil isn't exactly the honorable sort and shouldn't be expected to honor a bargain anyway. He spent thousands of years perfecting the art of tricking people. He offers Johnny a deal. The deal is crafted such that it appeals to Johnny's pride and dangles a golden fiddle before Johnny to appeal to his greed. In case his pride wasn't enough, Johnny acknowledges that, quote, it might be a sin. It's in the song, by the way. It might be a sin. Like he's already, should I be doing this? Before issuing the brash, prideful statement, I'm the best that's ever been, and accepts the deal. Sure, Johnny wins the fiddling contest, but the contest was never the devil's true intent. The devil lost on purpose just to further inflate Johnny's pride. The devil's true interest was to steal Johnny's soul by tricking Johnny into agreeing to the deal at all. Oh. And poor Johnny's soul was doomed from the moment he fell into the devil's trap and accepted the deal. That's a different take than I had taken on it. Yeah. But I thought it was a very interesting twist.
You can spin it both
right?
Ways,
you yeah. can hear it. When I first read it, I was like, but I thought about it. If I'm willing to go into partnership with the devil, I've already lost. Yeah. I've already lost.
If you're willing to chance it,
yeah.
you've already lost.
That's correct.
We're going to read Johnny's mind. Maybe he knew he was going to be the devil. He just took an opportunity to do so.
Okay. I'd like to go with that. I love the concept. And I'll show you that there are great sources that will back this up. And I'll show you one. Okay. Go back to what's our story? Adam and Eve in the Garden of Eden. Okay. You had the question, Liz. If God made it clear, do not eat from that blasted tree. Why did they do it? Why? If God came to you, and it's clear it was God, not we have to call the guys in white coats. We're not talking about that. Where it's crystal clear, right? Would you do it?
No.
Of course not. Even I wouldn't do it. I only play Rabbi on TV, right? So what made them do it? Go ahead.
Didn't Hashem know that they were going to do it?
It's not my question.
Okay.
Adam and Eve, though, they have a choice, yes or no. And did God make it clear that that was the wrong choice? Yes.
Yes.
Okay, why they do it? In their a lot of answers. A lot of answers.
Did they actually have the choice before the eighth?
Yes. Three? Yes. We can come back to that.
In their answers, defense. Yes. In their defense, what was death? Who knew what death was?
Fine, we talked about that already.
Well,
but I liked your answer right before this. Adam made the following calculation.
So he's going to beat it.
I'm willing to take on the challenge because I can still beat that devil. I can still beat it. I can eat from that tree, make the odds against me, but I can do this. I want to prove to God that I really do want to serve him. And I'm going to up the ante against me. Hmm. And I'm going to do it exactly what you said. I found that in a safer in a book that I have great regard for. That's his argument as to what was the rationale for Adam. Because it's really hard to understand it.
What was Eve's thought process?
I don't know. I haven't figured out women yet.
Oh, take a while.
Oh, whatever. It's for another time. But that concept resonates with me.
So he had free will before he ate the tree.
So you say to me, but that's what the tree was. Tree of knowledge of good and evil. That's your question, right?
Essentially, yeah. So he can't make a moral choice until he has a sense of morality. You can't make a moral choice without the knowledge of the consequences. So if he doesn't have the knowledge in the first place.
Okay. How have you come to answer that question from before? Do you think that they had the moral choices beforehand? What did you think before tonight?
Oh, well.
You think only I have to answer the hard questions?
I don't have an answer for this.
Okay. That's fair. I accept that. It's a hard question. Here's what I grapple with. On the one hand, if you say that they didn't have the choices, then what is God so angry with? It doesn't make sense to me. Do you get upset with the 2-year-old who writes on the wall, colors on the wall? Why?
I always wonder, is God really angry or is it kind of like a play angry?
I could have fooled me. I mean, he's pretty perturbed.
I can put that up.
Going to Pam's question, I mean, he's obviously going to know what's happening.
His knowledge doesn't change my choice because then free will, then the whole question comes up.
But if I give a 2-year-old a cup of juice and I know he's going to spill it, I can't.
Why? Really, how do you know he's going to spill it?
I might do it to train a dog or to train a child. That's not what you're supposed to do. But
do you know that the child's going to spill it? The answer is no. There's no human being that can actually say that the answer is definitively.
But if I give juice to the child, I know there's a chance that the child will spell.
That is correct. Thank you. That means there's a choice. Hmm. Thank you.
Is the child making the choice? Or maybe
based on a 2-year-old, yes. But that's not really
the glass.
Wait. So are we suggesting, let's just follow that to its logical conclusion. Adam and Eve were 2-year-olds. That's what's being suggested, that their intellectual capacity at that point was like an infant. They don't know right from wrong. Then I have a real problem with the rest of the story, because this isn't just God said, really, do you put the kid who's 2 years old in time out for doing that? No. I wouldn't. So God doesn't just put Adam and Eve in time out. Decrees mortality for humanity. Punishes everybody. The snake gets a punishment. Eve gets a punishment. Adam gets a punishment. The earth gets a punishment. For what? What do you expect them? They're 2-year-olds. I would be more bothered with that answer than what I have. Because the rest of the story just doesn't fit. An all-loving God? Gonna fool me. So what if we change it a little bit? Let's just, just as an analogy, okay? Third day of creation, trees. What kind of trees?
I don't know.
Were they just little saplings?
I don't know.
Really? You're picturing tall cedar, fully developed.
Yes.
Great. How is that possible?
Anything's possible.
Long days.
Long days.
Oh my God.
Well, the first 3 days, long days.
What the Big Bang? The first second of it lasted forever.
That's right.
Okay. you have the same picture I do. And that is, yes, they're fully developed trees. Fully. How about the animals that were on day five? Dimitri, day five, animals. Six, beasts. Days a day. Were they all pups?
No, I don't think so.
They were fully matured, regularly, right? That's how I also envision. So why do I think that Adam and Eve were any different? Fully developed, mature, thinking adults. Why not? Why?
Because they didn't have the experience of being able to choose.
Because human experience is about using your brain. You know?
So then they are infants.
Yeah.
What do you test from them?
I think the whole thing is a setup.
You can learn it that way. But that leaves me really unsatisfactory.
Oh, no, I think it's beautiful.
Why?
I have a lot of reasons to think that.
Okay.
Talk on this.
Oh, that's hard. That's hard for me. It's really harsh.
It's hard to argue
God
with
is looking for me to
not
fail.
That's a
setting up to fail.
Failing.
What chance was it to win?
Doesn't matter. It's not.
Well, I don't need it. It doesn't matter.
It doesn't matter because the whole point is growth.
Okay, so I have a hard time with that.
That's okay. Feel free to.
I'll explain it. I'll explain the line. Because if I look at God, like using Joe's word, that this is a coach, right? If Satan can be a spiritual coach, God certainly is my coach, right? What does my coach want? Nothing more than
success. I look at it differently.
I know.
But there is nowhere to progress in the paradise. You cannot grow in the paradise.
Not true. Not true. He gave him a choice. He gave him one choice.
But what's there to do? You have to become something when they do something.
Right. Okay, let me answer this question.
I'm wrong. Because
do we have this recorded? One second.
Yep.
In your interpretation, you have to be changed once they eat of the tree.
What do you mean change?
You're saying that they had fully developed sense of morality.
Correct. They knew what right and wrong was.
So did anything? What?
Yes, something drastic changed.
What changed for that?
Thank you for asking. Okay, watch. The tree of knowledge of good and evil. Okay, I'm going to read it. I'm going to say it slowly, and I'm going to put a comma in there. Most of us understand it, that it's the tree of knowledge of good, comma, and evil. It was a tree that represented both good and evil. Prior to eating of it, theoretically, they didn't know the difference between good, comma, and evil. But what if I translate and I put a comma in a different place? What if I read it as, this was the tree of knowledge of, comma, good and evil. A mixture. Gray. Prior to eating of it, there were two options. Black and white. Right and wrong. Eating from this tree, how about if I change the concept and call it the tree of confusion? Tree of confusion, doubt, where till that point you had two viable options, two very clear options. Follow God's command, check, good. Go against God's command, X, wrong, evil. Those two exist, and they have intellectual capacity to understand that. Just like trees are fully developed, Adam and Eve were fully developed. God said, I would love for you to go through life not having a third category called confusion. I'm not sure. I'm in doubt. Is this really right? I don't know. You made a good point. Maybe something good came out of my bad decision. Maybe it wasn't so bad after all. When we start thinking doubtful terms. And what was clear as black and white, right and wrong, is not anymore.
Was there free will when they had black and white?
These are your choices. Follow the command. That's choosing correct. Follow that which will bring you closer to God is the right decision. That which will distance you from God is the wrong decision. That's good and evil.
But without that knowledge of all the shades of gray in between, you're not really fully developed. You don't really have a sense.
Well, but that's what I said. Perhaps that's Adam's rationale to purposely eat from it to create that opportunity because he thinks that he can overcome that. That wasn't the plan.
Because he thinks in only A and B.
Mm-hmm. There are only two options. Yeah. You see, this is, to me, much more settling because I have a really hard time thinking that they're infantile. It's too difficult. This is God's creation. This isn't born. God created Adam and Eve. How could they not? It's very difficult for me. So this perspective has it that there are 100% fully developed. They have the capacity intellectually, emotionally. They're fully developed into human beings. And there's two choices, right and wrong. What's the definition of right? Bringing me closer to God. Follow God's command. Wrong? How can I determine it's wrong? I can't determine it, but God said, don't eat it. I didn't determine it was wrong. God did. Those choices existed. Adam said, I'm going to do it anyway. And now the rest of us suffer the consequences forevermore because we're all wearing shades of gray now. We can't see things so clearly. Every decision is a struggle. You know what changed drastically? This is how it's brought down. If you ever want to look this up, Rav Moshe Chaim Luzzatto. Rav Moshe Chaim Luzzatto, known as by his acronym, the Ramchal. The Ramchal, in one of his books called Derech Hashem, The Way of God, talks about this extensively. It's fascinating. The way he described it, the story of the Garden of Eden with the snake tempting, right? Partake of it. Now, given tonight's conversation, what does that remind you of?
Devil went down to Georgia.
Right? Is that not the classic picture? The devil is tempting. Take, it's not, come on. God's only saying that he doesn't want you to be like him. You'll be acknowledged. Painting this glorious picture, right? But Rav Moshe Chaim Luzzatto points out that the snake is external. It's external to Adam and Eve. It's outside. It's a creature that's tempting them.
With gray stuff. With in-between stuff. With
doesn't stuff say it that way. Partake of that tree. God doesn't want you to be so smart. Okay, it's an external temptation. When they ate, what happens when you eat something? You ingest it. Guess what now? Guess where this struggle now is? It's inside you. That's us. Isn't that who we are? That inner turmoil of that challenge of, is it the right thing to do? Is it not? Is this the right thing that's called for? Maybe. Where's that struggle? Well, it's not external anymore. It's all inside. That no longer is the snake outside.
But confusion is a great material to work with because that's what we can be creative with.
But it's extremely dangerous. I'll prove it to you. Look at the world. How many people have taken it the wrong way and not the right way? Unfortunately, it's only now
it's human nature.
Because we partook
with it. With the blind, that's why I answer your question. You cannot
there
create
is
things.
Free will. You can 100%. Have
yes or no.
I see, but it's almost,
that's why right I think God says now they're like one of us.
If Adam and Eve, up to that point,
so
only had the black and white choice,
they don't have the great things instead of just following the
instructions. Then why didn't God create it that way?
And then, of course,
I don't have the
creator. So I grappled with this too. I'm left to come to a conclusion, right? Okay. It wasn't part of the plan. Or, using your terminology, right? This was a test to see how we do it. Was it the right thing in God's eyes? Was it the right thing to eat from that tree at this point?
I think so.
Yes.
I have to say no. I have to say no, only given the way the rest of the story plays out. Were there good things that came out of it? I won't disagree with that. But I can't say God had a stamp of approval on this because he gets really ticked off and we are still to this day suffering.
But if he knows, he does anything.
Okay, that's a totally separate question. It doesn't change the conversation. You're right. It's a whole separate conversation about how does God's knowledge not impact my choice? It's a good question. It's a deep philosophical question that every philosopher has grappled with. And it's not something I can answer in 2 minutes.
Well, I think that humans have another purpose for God. No, sorry, I think God has another purpose for humans, pardon me. I think that maybe part of our purpose is to give God a chance to feel what it feels like to make decisions without not knowing the outcomes. Hold on a second. Let me just back that out a little bit. Even if God knows what the what we're going to choose at any time, then that can be a debate. It's a free will, it's not a free will. That doesn't matter. But we can't feel it. So God gets to experience through us what it feels like to have indecision. And therefore, God grows through us, through our imperfections.
Not there is our need to grow. For
so
no, well, but that's the question.
No, but yeah, but it's the only way God can feel what it feels like to make a choice about knowing the outcome is through us. Even if God knows what choice we're going to make.
Is God omnipotent?
Yes, and God can't, okay, yeah.
God cannot shrink God's self to be something less than God.
Hold on, that's not what I'm saying. God is omnipotent. God might say, okay, I know what you're going to choose because I'm omnipotent and I am not bound to the physics of time. I have a circular view of time. So, okay, cool. And?
I'm not asking about God's knowledge.
Okay.
Is God all everything? Is there anything outside of God? Is God perfect?
Okay, yes, that's not what I'm saying. What I'm saying is... Being perfect is me. What? I'm sorry.
I support you.
I know, but I don't want that right now. Let me talk. What I'm saying is, with all due respect, my love, what I'm saying is that our crinkly gray feelings that are inside of us, that we experience, that kind of non-black and white struggle is only experienced, God can't experience that without us as vehicles. And there's a reason I kind of have this idea, maybe we can talk about it one day. But so I think that that's part of our purpose, is to expand God's experience through our imperfections and our non-omnipotence. That makes sense.
I hear where you're coming from, and I guess what I'll have to respectfully disagree with is because in that working definition, there's a lacking in God.
No.
You're telling me, I'm understanding you correctly, God can't experience it.
God can't experience perfection except through us.
Yeah.
But that means he's lacking.
It's not lacking. It is not a lacking. It's like, it's a zhuzh. I don't know a word for it.
Yeah, it's
whatever it is, you're telling me that God can't have it unless we give it to him.
Correct.
I want to make sure I'm understanding.
Kind of.
Yeah. Yep. That's the same paradox as...
Whatever it is, whatever terminology you want to use, I think you're going to have to just call a spade a spade, and we can agree to disagree on that point. But you have to be honest with yourself. You're telling, using your definition, there is something, whether it's an experience or a zhuzh or a whatever, that God can't have unless it's through us as a vehicle. That means it's not in God's skill set.
You know what?
That's where I can't go.
You're right. I'm gonna have to come to
right.
grapple.
And that's fine. Yeah. That's fine. But you gotta call a spade a spade.
That's
totally cool.
How God does it. That's how God experiences things through humans, because when you're perfect, nothing changes around you unless you do not change, because they are immutable.
But so the definition of perfection also means that there's nothing outside of God's realm.
We are in God's realm.
But God, we're not God.
God is able to shrink God's self in order to create space for other things.
Okay, that's what I started with. That in Kabbalistic terminology, it's a paradox that defies a certain
English. It's just a way to
English.
Because if God is already everything, you cannot create additional things. If you have to kind of...
Right. So, but I'm saying that's what the issue boils down to.
We're
that's
all
really
agree.
What it boils down to. 120%,
we're agreeing.
So that's how I address that point. Free will is the mechanism that God has created to allow human beings to make moral choices. devil, Satan, whatever it is that angel that's there to tempt us towards the negative side, right? As opposed to, we'll call it the positive, the good inclination is there to tempt us, to show us the value of making the morally right choice. That's how the system is set up. I didn't get to what I want to talk about. I'll share one other interesting thing about this song. If you listen carefully, when it's the devil's turn to play, even Charlie Daniels himself made this point. It's not music. It's not melodious. It's noise. There's hissing. It's not a nice, smooth music.
It's also a band.
Can we pull it up?
Ask her to play it.
Hold on. Oh, yeah.
Ask Alexa.
Yeah. Alexa, play The Devil Went Down to Georgia. Alexa, volume 6.
My kids are reading songs. What are they doing down there? Party.
So listen when he gets to the turn of the devil. Here, he himself plays this out. He purposely did it, that it's just noise. It's not really song. It's not music.
For a song to speak, you'll need to the band, point the hand, look at the mega deal. When it came across, if you're a man, saw on the field and play it hot, and the devil jumped up on the hickory nuts and boy, I'm going to tell you what. Like, you know what, but I'm a fiddle player too. And if you care to take a dare, I'll make a bet with you. Now, you play a pretty good fiddle, boy, and give the devil his view. I'll bet a fiddle of gold against your soul because I think I'm better. Said, my name's Johnny, and it might be a sin, but I'll take your bet you're going to regret, and I'm the best it's ever been. Johnny Ross, love your bow and play your fiddle hard. I'll sell for Bruce and Jordan, and the devil feels at heart. And if you win, you get this shiny fiddle made of gold. But if you lose, the devil gets your soul. And he said, I'll start this show. And the fire flew from his fingertips as he rolled up his bow. And he pulled the bow across the strings and it made an evil hiss. Then a band of demons joined in and it sounded something like this.
Johnny playing.
When the devil finished, Johnny said, well, you're pretty good, old son. Let's sit down in that chair right there and let me show you how it's done. Follow the night, run, boys, run. The devil's in the house of the rising sun. Jesus, red man, picking out doors. Red and dark, back on top, no.
You hear the difference?
Mm-hmm. Never noticed it.
Isn't that amazing?
He laid that golden fiddle on the ground at Johnny's feet. Johnny said, devil, just come on back if you ever want to try again. I told you once, you son of a bitch, I'm the best that's ever been. And he played fine. Devil's in the house of the rising sun. Jesus, you're great, kind of picking out gold. Red and we don't fight no time, no.
Isn't it amazing? He based it on a poem.
What do we know about Charlie?
He based it on a poem. But I'll tell you one line he said after this finishes. Fascinating. Stacey, you heard the difference?
Oh, yeah. I love
it. It was, I read that. I listened to the song over. Yeah. It's like, it's just astounding how they built in. Now, that is a concept in Judaism also. If you understand that the devil, Satan, it's a temptation, it's not real. It looks like, but it's really nothing but noise. And you get suckered into it.
It's not the true inspiration.
It's not.
Yeah.
In much of Judaic literature, this world is called Olam HaSheker. It's the world of falsehood. It appears one way, and it's really not. And it's just, there's so many levels of deception, and that which glitters is gold.
And this goes back to there being gray versus black and white. Yeah.
But John, I'll end with this. I'll let you guys go, because last time I held you like 2 hours. John himself, Charlie Daniels, said the following. He said, I should have added this. I meant to put it in and I didn't. This should have been part of the lyric. Listen to this line. You can't beat the devil without the Lord. Can you imagine?
Why did
he say he wanted to put it in? He said, I regret not putting it in. That's the message, folks.
That's good. That's your message from the very beginning.
That's it. Huh. That's it. It's fascinating. Okay. I'm so glad you guys put me up to this challenge. I'm loving it.
Excellent.
This song will never mean the same to us.
No, never.
What was Satan's name? This Satan?
No, Satan is the name that's used, but it's really a verb. Lis Satan means to put a stumbling block, to prosecute, to, the lamed in front means to do, like a verb. Lis Satan. It's actually in the Torah, in the story with Balaam and his donkey.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, it is. That was nuts.
Tiny books.
The angel of Hashem said to him, for what reason did you strike your donkey these three times? Behold, I went out to impede. I went out to impede. And you know, Yatsati lis Satan. To act as an impediment, to deter. That's really where the word comes from. And that's why he's called the Satan. He's the impediment. Fascinating. Great. Well, thank you all. Appreciate you taking the time.
Next time we drive, we should do a big sleep boat now.
Start next thing.
No, no.
Yes, thank you.
The car is not going to make a big car.
Stacey, we good?
You know, it's a question of language, because we do not have the language to describe what might have happened.
Well,
we're trying to use approximations.
I have some.
It's very deep meaning, like what meant, what does it mean when God says, now they became the one of us? So, what does it mean and what meant?
That's what God is confused. You raise a really good point. I'm always...
Before that, we're not
like. I'm always... I'm trying to find the right word. I'm always... I always ask myself... It is a good question. It's not a good question. I'm always left with one question. Why are we told this information?
Maybe
not everything. This is the worst history book in all of history. It really is terrible. Think about it. From a historical perspective, it jumps. It jumps in different orders. It skips a boatload of information. But the answer is, it's not a historical book. It's not meant to be historical. It's meant to be a moral book. So then I read a story and I'm left with a question. What's my message? What's the lesson? It
depends on
what. And there's multiple layers. As Pamela said.
Every time you learn
more. 100%.
That's the goal. We learn more and more. Pleasure.
That would be so. I think that I owe you No, I owe you an explanation.
You.
I owe you an explanation of some things, and I'm going to send you an email.
Fine. I would be happy.
Yeah.
I would love to continue the dialogue.
Yeah. So I shall.
Great.
I just didn't want to get
it. That's fine.
Yes.
That's fine.
Yes.
Oh, thanks.
Hey,
what do you mean? It's a visit.
No, I have some non-perishable
would be easier if we didn't
get it wrong anymore.
This is it's like oil and some things that I want to eat, like breakfast oil that I want to get rid of while I'm staying with you, and then a couple of things. It doesn't open it.
No, I mean, you're
dealing with. No, it's not.
Very, very much.
I have an ex.
Don't you want to look at that? I think you want to
pair it up.
Yeah, always interesting.
You know,
thank you.
All right. Yeah, I mean, it's okay. But it's not really big.
Right.
It's all right. If you want margaritas, it's not there. I'm sorry. The new one is the signature name. You know where Rubino used to be?
Right.
With the Harris.